Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence. And now here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Good evening, listeners. This is Monday evening and I'm thrilled to be here with you. So it's fantastic that we are together, and I want to share with you, we have a special guest today, Michael Blanchard, and welcome, Michael.
Hi, Divya. Thank you. I was listening to the introduction, and it was hitting home because it was spinning through the years of my life, so I'm so excited to be here.
Excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm sitting here on the island of Martha's Vineyard, and life is extremely good right now. I remember when I met you the first time, we were in a room with a lot of other people, and every person that came to you, you looked at as if they were the most important person in the room. And so I remember that, and I was very excited about the chance to get on the show with you.
Michael, that's very kind of you, because that's at the core of my heart, and for you to recognize that, I really appreciate that.
No, you're welcome, because you are a person that goes out and tries to quell the negative voices in people's heads that holds them back. But when I saw you there and listened to your words, I could tell that you do what you say, and it's very, very important for me. Very important.
Oh, you said it, Michael. You know, it's almost like you're echoing my sentiments. And for me, it's not about just going out there and teaching people or preaching people. It's about practicing what you teach so that we are all in sync.
The old saying, action speaks louder than words, right?
It's very true, very true. But actions do speak louder than words. So that said, let's go ahead and get started. So folks, you know, I want to share with you, Michael is a phenomenal person, and he is open to sharing his story. It's a tough story. And I remember, like, you know, when I met Michael in person and Michael was sharing his story with me, I said, would you be okay to be in hot seat? And then I would ask the tough questions. And he said, yep.
I've been in the hot seat most of my life. So this is just, I feel like I am totally at home right now. Okay.
So Michael is a phenomenal person who used to be a chief operational officer of a large company. And he is a writer. He's a photographer. He's got masters in psychology and a lot of great things. And we'll find out as we go along. So, Michael, do you recall any moments from your childhood that stand out in your memory and that impacted your life?
Yeah. And when you start talking about your childhood, none of us had the perfect childhood, and I had a very, very good childhood, but I had, my basis for the future was around being something, a thing, rather than, it was to be a baseball player or a professional athlete. And I had my whole childhood identity wrapped around, a thing. And I've written and talked to parents about trying to encourage their kids to, you know, have as a goal to be kind and loving and those kinds of things and be happy. And I put too much weight in a thing. And when that disappeared, I became lost. High school and all those years that are normally associated. Well, I shouldn't say normally. There's a lot of people that have miserable high school years, but I just felt lost the entire time. And I think what happened is that as I grew older, in the absence of an identity in an athletic situation, I had no idea what to do, and so I just simply became followed in my father's footsteps. And he was in business, and that's the only thing I knew. And I ended up going in that direction, and that sort of set the stage for a number of years of not the most fulfilling life by any means.
Mm-hmm. And to me, that always pains me, because the reason I do what I do is, like, you know, whether it's my influence advising or coaching or having wonderful guests like yourself on the show, is about that when we hear about other people's stories, you know, we can learn from their mistakes and hopefully make an effort to avoid those mistakes, or at least, you know, even if we make those mistakes, that the passage is much easier. So that said, you know, you mentioned that something about baseball, and baseball is one of the sports that I really like to watch and I enjoy. You know, Yankees is my team, and if you like any other team, that's fine too, but I will say that for me, Yankees the best team. So saying that, Michael, what was it that happened and that thing was just kind of gone?
It was because of an injury and also some disappointments. And I think what it comes down to is that it's all a self-esteem and self-love issue. And for some reason, you know, and I could probably talk for hours in terms of why there became a lack of self-confidence. I went from a very confident person, and then when I through injury and then not making the team and in high school and so on, it was a confidence issue. So without having faith in yourself, the ability to move to something else was almost impossible, because I was afraid of everything and just didn't have that that, you know, and that's persisted throughout the rest of my life and in self-doubt on everything that I do. And when I get good at it, then I conquer that. And then you move on to the next thing. And if it's in a different space, you still have to fight those old demons that you've had ever since childhood. And trying to move from a chief operating officer into a photographer was almost as scary as trying to find another place to go after losing a childhood dream.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And our listeners are already engaging. Aaron is asking us, would it not be best to learn from our own mistakes? Absolutely, Aaron. You know, there's nothing like learning from your own mistakes. And yet, when you may be so close to something that you are undecided on, like you don't know whether you want to make a decision or not, then you do look at others. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Michael.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, again, you're in a vulnerable situation. There's so many times that I use my adult brain and I go back and I try to place that brain in my 15-year-old body and say, oh, man, why did you make the decisions that you did? Why did you feel that way? What happened that led you to a place of lack of believing in yourself? And you know, when you become timid, there are just certain paths that kids go down. And that's, you know, very much why I'm passionate about what I'm doing now, is because, unfortunately, you know, kids that have lost their faith in themselves or hope, you know, we know about all the things that are going on. And now that I have that adult brain, I can relate to kids who because I can put myself right back in that place again, where anxiety, and the need to sedate, and the need to have expectations that may not be fulfilled, and the suicide rates, and all the things that go on with kids that lose their way. I'm not regretful now that I went through all of that, because I think I have an empathy and a connection with kids that I wouldn't have had if I didn't feel that those things in the first place. And I firmly believe there were never any wasted minutes, even though they were somewhat painful minutes.
No, you're right on about that. And can you share with our listeners what is it that you do?
Yeah, I was in the business world, and until 2 years ago, I rose up through the corporate ladder and eventually became a chief operating officer of a healthcare company. And I had 1,000 employees. But during that time, I oscillated up and down and with alcohol. And I was a marathon runner. And that's an interesting combination between being an alcoholic and a marathon runner, but it's actually not that unusual in that you try to sedate, whether it's endorphins or alcohol. And eventually, as I got older and I couldn't run all the miles, I started substituting with alcohol. And that started to get in the way of family. I ended up getting divorced twice, two kids that had to suffer through that. And eventually, I went into a total and complete collapse. And in a 3-month period, I was arrested 3 times for drunk driving. And at the end of that, after the last arrest, I had Xanax and vodka that I was about to consume, and I was caught. And I ended up in a psychiatric hospital for 2 weeks because I wanted to end it. And I had enough. And at that point, a physician who was in that hospital took the brave leap of authenticity, and he shared with me his personal story. And that story was that he was near death with his own personal alcoholism. He had since recovered, and he had gone to a rehab facility that he convinced my employers that they should not fire me, even as a chief operating officer with 3 DUIs. And he, after all the years of struggle to find a means of hope, something to hang on to say that I could beat this or that I could live in the absence of alcohol, it's so strange. It hits me today. It's just so strange that the words of one man in a bedside situation, who is willing to extend his heart by being authentic in that moment, he just took me right out of my place. And I said, oh, this is a physician who's telling me these things about himself. That what bravery that would have taken to say something like that to one of his patients. And then I just listened. And for some reason, I decided from that moment on, I was at least going to be open to revisiting hope. And that moment of authenticity he was my role model. And I went through, you know, a couple of years coming back that were awful. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But that desire to be authentic stayed in my heart. And, you know, it led up to me coming to talk to you and to others. And to finally, I finally discovered a creative outlet in photography by happenstance about 3 years into sobriety. And I'm 9 years sober now. And 3 years in, I heard a speech, and it talked about a bipolar businessman who was an alcoholic that found peace and comfort and creativity and connection with something larger than himself through the taking and editing of photographs. And when I heard that speech, it stuck with me, even though I had never used a camera other than, you know, Instamatics and things like that. And from that moment, I started listening to videos, and I bought a camera, and eventually started taking pictures and took the chance of putting them on Facebook. I got my daughter to be my first like on Facebook. and I think I had to twist her arm, okay? But eventually, a year or two in, people started saying, wow, you're pretty good. And but there was something still lacking there. And that lacking was that I felt like I was given this talent for a reason, not just to take pictures and have people put likes on my pictures. And I said, you know what, I'm going to come out of the closet, and I'm going to start, because there's a lot of people that are hurting out there. And I am so blessed to even be here that I want to give back. And I was struggling with staying sober. I didn't have a lot of meaning because I was still doing the business world that really wasn't that fulfilling. And so by taking pictures, and then I started writing about my alcoholism, and people were utterly shocked that I would say things like I was arrested and I tried to commit suicide. And there were many people that were even suspicious and saying, what's wrong with you? This was back a ways when it wasn't as common as it is now. Over the last 5 years, we've been more open about it. But it just like relieved me. It felt like when I came out of the closet and said, I am a recovering alcoholic, and I don't have to cover up my name or put a bag on my head and not care anymore. I don't care if people, you know that I'm a recovering alcoholic. That it was so liberating. It made me alive again. And then I seemed to touch the hearts of other people who were looking for authentic people, just like I had. And my Facebook page over the last 5 years has grown from my daughter's single like to 52,000. And that's why when you said to me, oh, this is good stuff for a hot seat segment. And they said, are you sure you want to sit in the hot seat? And I said, absolutely, because I want to say things that will give other people hope that were in as bad a place as I used to be. And that's my goal.
No, that's beautiful. And Michael, I have to say that when you talk about being authentic, you know, when I was at the National Publicity Summit, you talk with wonderful people. And gosh, I would say what 70 to 80 people shared their stories with me. And it was very hard to decide, you know, who would I like to connect with, and who would I like to bring as a guest on my show so that it helps our audience. And yours just stood out. I did not even have to think twice. So that's a kudos and recognition to your authenticity that it's visible from far away.
Well, and I didn't tell you, though, in the interest of full authenticity, that I'm a Red Sox fan. And because I didn't want to blow my chance completely, you being a Yankee fan. You guys did a lot better than we did this year, so congratulations.
Well, you know, it's a sports thing, and it's a fun rivalry, but at the end of the day, it's about being a sports person and just having that sportsman spirit or a sportswoman spirit.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it any other way. Families wouldn't be as much fun if it wasn't for the Red Sox and the Yankees.
I totally get it. I mean, you know, I've sat across dinner tables where people have been, especially during holidays, you know, people who are like others fans, and like we bring up and, oh yeah, your team this and that. So that said, kind of coming back to our conversation, Lester, you know, you asked that how would we know the mistakes of others would be the mistakes of us as well. So Michael proves that point so beautifully that, let's say, you know, if you have thoughts of like, okay, I don't know, this is happening in my life, if it's a mistake or not, and if it's something similar that Michael may have done, you will connect with it, you'll resonate with it, and you'll know that. And in situations like that, you would make a change or not, and it's all up to us. And Michael, you want to also share your thoughts about Lester's question?
Yeah, if I understand his question, the identifying with the person, I give you one quick example. I met with a woman who saw what I write on Facebook and connected with something I said around her struggles with alcoholism, and she didn't even know me, and we went and met at a coffee shop, and she said to me, I need to tell somebody that I've started drinking alcohol again, and I see a therapist, but I can't tell the therapist. And I looked at her and I said, well, what do you see the therapist for? And she said, because I was in an abusive relationship, and that all the damage done from physical abuse. And I said, I'm so sorry about that. But I said, why are you telling a complete stranger that you are drinking again, but you won't tell your therapist who you've been working with? She said, because I trust you. And I said, but we haven't met. And she said, you are willing to say things that most people aren't, and I just feel like I can talk to you. I don't think you'll judge me. And I said, I really appreciate that. But I said, you also have to talk with your therapist and say that. I said, why are you afraid to tell her? And she said, well, because she's going to get mad at me and she's going to judge me. And I said, then you need to get a different therapist, or you have to tell the whole story. You have to be comfortable speaking the whole truth. So I guess getting back to his question, I think that solidified my purpose, is that here we have an individual that felt like, because I spoke out, that she could identify with my situation and then I wouldn't judge her. Mm-hmm. And that non-judgment has become a bit of a calling card, so that people will reach out for the first time, and then I can, even though I'm not a licensed therapist, I do have my master's in psychology, but I don't practice that. I practice authenticity with the hopes that others will relate. And I think if they know that they've walked in your shoes, they're much more likely to express what they're feeling, and hopefully take that next step because of that authenticity that you've been willing to share. It doesn't seem as daunting if you know somebody else. And so, in fact, some people look at me and say, oh my God, you're so much worse than I was. whatever it takes.
Yeah. And, you know, like, we all go through our pits of pain and our pits of mistakes. Nobody's perfect. And that's what makes it so beautiful being a human.
It absolutely does. In fact, it's that acceptance in yourself. And I fight that even to this day. I mean, you know, like I told you, as a child, having confidence to do something other than my dream, I remember the first day that I opened my gallery, and it has all my work in it. And I walked, I had hung everything on the wall. And then that evening, with the lights dim, I walked into the gallery and I just stood there in silence. And I looked at the walls and I started to tear up. And I felt a wave of fear that I felt, an insecurity that I felt when I was 15 years old. And the reason is because what if somebody comes into that gallery and turns their nose up or says, oh, I don't like this work. There's no place to hide. You're taking your soul and you're putting it out there, and it's you, and there's nothing but you. And it's really scary. And so at this stage of life, I still have those same fears as I do when I was 15. The difference is that I learned that courage isn't the absence of fear. It's taking action anyway. And so I wish I didn't have fear. But I also have the courage to keep going forward because I want to do something. I'm 62 years old. Cripe, I'm like getting to be ancient. no disrespect to anybody who's over 62. That's just me. But you know, as you pass through your years of your life, there's a place where you start wanting to leave a legacy, and you want to leave something. You want meaning. You want to help other people. I'm at that place where, even though I still have the same childhood fears, I'm not going to let it stop me, and I'm not going to let the embarrassment and shame of the damage and the things that I've done stop me from going forward. And I'm going to say I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize. I'm going to try to make good through my actions, but I'm not going to turn away in fear and just live the same kind of life that I had in the past.
Mm-hmm. And so, no, absolutely. I totally agree with you in that we have made mistakes. And the beauty of that is that when you are accepting and compassionate of your mistake, it makes it so much more easier accepting others. Because as they say, you know, we do project a lot of what we are feeling onto others. So
the other piece of it is that diseases of
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Depression, addiction, alcoholism have at its core isolation. And, you know, kudos to the people that are listening to the podcast. They're reaching out. They're trying to bring new information into their hearts and so on. And the one thing that I didn't realize is that when I became a photographer, I moved out of isolation. And it came from the need to connect with not only what I consider a higher power or spirituality that I discovered when I started going outside with the camera that I never knew even existed. But what would often happen is I would bump into people in my journey, heading out to go see a bird or a beach. I'd find a person who seemed to coincidentally cross my path that would change my whole view on life. And it became a focal point for getting back to life. And then I started to study the way that art and art therapy can open a heart that maybe people can't. I'm trying to work with kids and others that, you know, to use iPhones and photographs. I mean, everybody has a camera on them now for a reason, because photographs carry extreme power. And sometimes people can speak through their photographs when it's not necessarily so easy to speak with their words. And so I'm fascinated with the power of photography to heal people if it's used in the right way in a therapeutic setting. So it's right there in front of us, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are a couple of other questions that have come in. So Willow has asked, this was a question for some time back, that when you started sharing about yourself, the hard facts, the hard truths, Was it hard to share?
It wasn't hard to share, but it was hard. I'm the type of person that if you get a 99 on the test, I'm shameful for the one I got wrong. So when I would share, I'd get 99, thank you for being who you are and sharing. But then I got a response from someone early on that said, you should be ashamed of yourself. You were arrested 3 times for drunk driving. They should have thrown you in jail, and they should have thrown the key away and just left you there to rot. And that's what he sent me for a note. And that hurt. Those comments hurt. And yeah. But I had to take a step back and say, what if his child was killed in a car accident by a drunk driver? He holds a heaviness in his heart that I can't judge. And so I have to be accepting and say, I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm in a place where I want to give back and I want to help other people now. And I'm going to move forward and try to do that if people find that to be helpful for them. And I'm not going to stick my head in the sand in shame. But I'm going to be empathetic and sympathetic to why he has such anger for me without necessarily knowing me. And it would just inspire me to work that much harder. So it was hard, but it was harder when people doubted me and my motives. And as an alcoholic, I used to lie at every chance to cover up my disease. And when you lie for 30 years, it becomes part of your psyche. So that even when you recover and you're telling the truth, sometimes your brain plays tricks on you and makes you feel like maybe you're doing this for yourself, Mike. You're not doing it for the other person. Maybe it's all ego. And so it takes time. So getting, to the question is that it was hard, but then as I started seeing successes in people have come from all over the world to my gallery to just hug me and say, and we'd cry and share stories. I had onlookers say, aren't you selling pictures there? Why are people crying in your gallery? and it's because we had made such a strong connection, and that made it worth all of the hits that I took along the way. And I always try to refrain from judging the place that the other person might be coming from.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And our next question is from Renee. What are good focal points?
Focal points in terms of trying to, it's funny she used the word focal points because that's what I do is I focus on. My new book is A Photographer's Journey, looking at life through a sober lens. It's all about what you focus on, and to focus with a sober lens is completely different than with an addicted lens. So my focus points, it became liberating when I would see somebody that got better because of something that I may have said. I have to focus on giving back to other people. If some of your audience have been alcoholics or addicts, there's a real shame that's associated with that. And to alleviate shame, when you suddenly have somebody come up to you and say, you helped me and you helped my family, there's no better cure for shame than to know that what you went through made a difference for somebody else. So my focus was on trying to get outside my head and get outside of Michael and to say, what can I do? Because if I help them, I have a chance of making it. Because it's a disease. The disease of alcoholism does not go away. And if I lie or cheat or use what I do for less than altruistic and helpful ways, then I have to worry about quelling those negativities. And that's where relapses and everything else come in. And so I find alcoholics and addicts who are in recovery to be some of the most trustful, amazing people on the face of the earth because they now are in a place of gratitude. And so I focus on helping others and trying to really remain grateful.
Gratitude, that's such a beautiful word. I love gratitude because It's yes, it puts so many things into perspective.
The magic answer, if someone in the audience can answer this, how can you become grateful without losing something first? When I lost my driver's license, I used to sit in the window looking down at people driving by, and I would actually look at the people sitting in their driver's seats, and I would say, I bet you haven't even thought once how grateful you should be that you can drive that car. It's true, though. Why do you have to always lose something to become grateful? And I think if we can, you know, now I get up in the morning, and sometimes when I get in the shower, I'll say, you know, there's most half of the world doesn't even have the luxury of getting water, nice warm water running over their body with soap. And I'm going to be grateful if I have that, then it's going to be a good day. I try to remember that when I'm going behind somebody going 15 miles an hour and a 30 mile an hour. But that grateful part is so important for depression and, you know, when you're comparing what you have versus what your expectations are. And if your expectations are always so high that you can never meet those, depression is just lurking because you're not achieving what that expectation is. So gratitude is something that I have to sometimes force myself to do on a consistent basis, because we just get too complacent, and it has to be a regular part of your thought process on a daily basis to stay healthy.
So Mike shared a really good comment. You can lose things and become bitter as well. So Mike, that's a very profound statement. And here's the thing, that we all lose things. And what can we do about it? The key is to acknowledge those feelings and accept those feelings as part of grief, or just sitting with those feelings and yet at the same time looking at what you got and not taking one loss make you lose other things that you may have in life. So that's something listeners, you know, would definitely like to bring a point across, because as a practitioner of mindfulness, you know, so many times people say, what about the loss that I've had? But think about it, that if you are not grieving it, and if you're not healing yourself, and if you're keeping that hurt, you would lose, or you may lose, a lot of other things.
Well, and that's one of the things we talked about, and, you know, I can talk forever, so just yell at me. We talked about post-traumatic growth a little bit, and, you know, when I, you know, I didn't want to go through all of that. You know, being arrested that many times and being in a place where you don't want to live anymore. And it's now a place that I fear. I fear ever going back to it. I have so much empathy for people that are in that place. But what I would say is, in terms of gratitude and hope and so on, is that sometimes the kind word of a single person can turn that entire thing around. With me, I had to go through that pain to get washed clean. And I would have lived a mediocre, unfulfilling, alcohol-addicted life that I wouldn't wish on anyone. And in exchange for that, I went through a traumatic bottom, and I almost lost everything. And on the upside, I became grateful, and I realized what's important. And I had to go through the trauma to get where I'm, the place that I'm at today. I don't regret the trauma. I started to study post-traumatic growth, which has been studied in Australia, of all places, as a significant body of work, where people who go through trauma, and trauma can be different for different people. It doesn't have to be sexual abuse or some war situation. It can be something that someone perceives as traumatic that can affect the remainder of their life. But sometimes people go through trauma and grow in ways they could not possibly achieve in the absence of having gone through that. And I'm a big fan of post-traumatic growth, and it doesn't eliminate pain, but it changes its perspective in some ways. And I am so grateful that I went through every step of the process to get where I am now, because you know, if it came to an end tomorrow, I actually feel like my life meant something. And I couldn't say that for the past 35 years.
That's very profound, Michael. And I have to say, you know, your pictures are beautiful. And can you share with people that sometimes what happens is people may be in a profession where they're not very thrilled with it, the boss might not be good, or even if they're an entrepreneur, that's something that's not working out from it. And you did, from being a CFO to going to being a photographer. I mean, that's a pretty almost 180 degrees change. So how did it come about?
Well, I think I did it on a gradual basis, but it ends up being that sometimes you have to make a decision, because as a chief operating officer in charge of a healthcare company, how many chief operating officers will you see that will write on Facebook that they went through a difficult time last night in terms of you know, contemplating relapse, but after grabbing the camera, I'm making this up at this point, but it's an example. But by grabbing a camera and going out and connecting with the beauty that this world is, and then meeting in someone who helped inspire me and get me through that evening, showed me how beautiful and how worthwhile this life is living in the absence of chemicals and to stay in the state that I'm in. I was writing stuff like that as a chief operating officer because I was so compelled to want, I wanted to share with everybody. I wanted them to know that you can have pain in your life, and you can have happiness without having to take drugs or alcohol. I really believe that, and I wanted them to know that. I don't know why it was so important to me. I had to say it, and I give credit to my employer, but at some points it got to be an issue where I was being told that this is not, you know, behavior conducive of a chief operating officer of a large company, and I can get their point. You know, do you want to have a public company where the COO is saying that I struggled last night? You know, and I think it started to rub, and I had to make a decision. And, you know, what was my passion? What was my purpose on the planet? And it wasn't to run a company. It was to take what I learned and to help other people for my life to have meaning. And so I had to make that decision. And eventually it pushed me and propelled me along. And I was fearful, but I still acted anyway because I just had to do it. And as of last year, for the first time, I am now a full-time photographer with no other means of employment. And so I sell photographs and write books and do fundraising with calendars, and I give back to the community. And I am so happy because I went through this summer, and I can verify the belief that if you give it all away, it comes back a thousandfold. But I will tell you, it was stressful going through the transition period. So if some of your listeners are in a place where, well, I'm not happy with what I'm doing, and I want to move in a different direction, I would suggest that they try. I did both at the same time because I wasn't sure. And there's nothing wrong with experimenting in your life with other options. You know, we do have to make money. We have to pay the bills. But in the end, you have to do what's in your heart. And sometimes there's risk taking. And the piece that is so important is the giving it all away. I have done so much fundraising. I've given so much away because I am so grateful that I am here and that people help me. And it's, you just got to believe that when you give things away, it comes back. The world rises up to meet you and helps you on your path. And I don't know if you want to call it philanthropy or giving or just extending a hand and helping another person, letting somebody pull out in front of you, you know, so that they can get out, things like that. I just practice relentless giving back. Karma's a beautiful thing. but it does come back to meet you and greet you, and that would be my best advice.
Mm-hmm. So if you would share your, you know, there are a couple of other questions before we get to them because we're nearing to the end of the show. Please do share your book name, where can they find it, your beautiful photographs that you have done, and they're phenomenal, folks. So give all your contact information, and then we'll go back to the questions of our listeners.
All right. No, I do appreciate that. I have my first book was Fighting for My Life, and it was about my story. And there were 12 principles that I listed. And what would happen is I have a short attention span, no big novels, but someone would read and look at a picture. And when you associate words with a picture, it would move some people to get help. And that was the most rewarding thing that I've ever done. We sold out all 2,500 books, and so I'm going to have it republished. But my new book that's out in November, it'll be here mid-November, is called Through a Sober Lens, A Photographer's Journey. It is 43 life stories, actual stories. They all fit on one page. Again, me for my short attention span. And each story is paired with a photo. Because there's something magical that happens if you can write and you can attach an emotion to a photo and it resonates with someone, it can give them hope or help them through that circumstance. And so I have a story about fatherhood. I have another story about intimacy in the lack of alcohol. How do you become intimate with others without alcohol when your life has all been that way, and other things. So I'm hoping people will read the story and come away with their conclusion that will help them think about not just addiction and sobriety, but life in general, and to plant a seed of hope in their heart. If that happens, it's been a great success. My website is Blanchard Photo MV. It's Blanchard, Blanchard, photomv.com. And there's a tab on there that says Through a Sober Lens, and that's where the book can be ordered. Certainly anybody can reach me at mblanch601@mac.com, my email address. Mm-hmm. All right.
No, that's great, folks. You know, definitely check it out. And we have other questions pouring in. Very quickly, if you could share if you teach how to be a photographer in any of these books, or if you have a course around it.
No, that's next on the list. I just held a workshop this weekend, and it was called an inspirational photography workshop, because it's not just about taking the picture. It's about having, I insert a search for meaning with it. And it's kind of fun when you have people that are on the technical side that suddenly say, "Why, I never thought about photography that way," you know. But stay tuned on the website. I have many people asking, I just want to be able to take a picture off the automatic setting. Just tell me how to get that first picture that I can do with my own control. And so I'm going to hope to offer that as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And folks, you know, we can invite Michael back again, and he can share with us tips around photography.
Sure, happy to.
So a couple of last questions, if you can just kind of share a little briefly. Is there any money in photography? And the second question is, how would a person get into selling pictures?
If you go on Instagram or Facebook, there's a million photographers. I've had photographer after photographer ask me, how do I make a living? And I am making a living. I'm not making the money that I made when I was a chief operating officer. I'm nowhere near that. But I make enough to be happy. I'm in a place in my life where my kids' college is paid for. I don't have great income needs, but I'm very happy with where I am. And there's only it's the connection with the person. When someone purchases a photograph, they're purchasing something that resonates in their heart, and they connect with an individual. If I tell a story about starting over and I connect that to one of the pictures I've taken, the person that's looking at the picture remembers the time when they had to start over, And suddenly that picture has so much meaning for them because we both had that same feeling embedded in that photo. And so it can't be fake and it can't be a marketing spiel. It has to come from the heart. And it has to be a connection that you establish with your audience. I can't emphasize that enough. So I know that doesn't help very much, but in a world of billion photographers, it's what you bring to the photograph and your connection with the audience that makes all the world of difference.
Mm-hmm. No, very well said. And Jake is asking if you can come back and share with our listeners how to get into photography, how to sell your work. Definitely, Jake, you know, you are one of my listeners, and this show is for you guys.
Yeah, yep. And Jake, listen, all you guys out there, if you go to my website or Facebook site, I am not in this to try to monetize you. I am known for giving away lots of things as far as information. I'm happy to give you vendors that I use and techniques that I use and how I've done it. So go to BlanchardPhotoMV.com or to that email address, mblanch601@mac.com, and I'm happy to help you guys offline.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. Greatly appreciate it. And thank you, Michael, for being so open and just sharing your heart.
And thank you back at you for the same. You can just tell talking with you, you're very easy to talk to, and I'm sure your audience loves you.
Well, I know I love them, and I would like to thank you, and I would like to thank our audience as well as Rebel for making this show possible, because without her, we would not have such ease and grace in our show. So thank you. And listeners, you know, reach out to me and let me know what kind of stories you want. And we'll definitely keep in mind to bring Michael back on the show.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care and be brilliant until next time.
All right. Have a great night. Thank you.
Thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.divyaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.